Have you been hitting the books and listening to lectures all day? It's time to relax, to unwind, and listen up. This is Brooke from Campus Chronicles, your go-to podcast for everything student life. No matter where you are in your academic journey, we have you covered. Think of us as a trusted mentor, friend, and confidant who always has your back. We'll be sharing inspiring stories, thought-provoking insights, and practical advice to help you succeed in and out of the classroom. So get ready to be inspired, enlightened, and entertained. Hello, hello, everyone. I am so excited to introduce you to this wonderful woman that we have today. Her name is Lisa Zaratny, and she is from Positively Productive. And let me tell you, this woman is so kind. She is so productive. I couldn't admire her more. Lisa, thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you, Brooke. It's my pleasure, and I feel the same about you.
I am so excited to dive into all of the incredible things that you've prepared for us. But before we do all of that, let's dive into your backstory. Give us some insight into who you are.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so on the, immediate surface, hi, I'm Lisa Zaratny. I am the founder of Positively Productive Systems. I'm the host of the Positively Living podcast, and I'm a productivity coach helping my clients reduce their overwhelm, manage stress, and design personalized systems. And this is so important that we do things in a way that makes sense for us. And that's your big takeaway, even before I'm finished introducing myself. If you walk away with nothing else today, it's up to you to decide what you need to do and how you need to do it best. And that's what I do with my clients. We do it with compassion and humor so that it's shame-free productivity. It's the kind of productivity that doesn't just help you get things done, but live a more fulfilling life. That's what it's all about. And then when I'm not doing that, I'm trying to walk my own talk. I'm hanging out with my husband and my kiddos. I have two teens now, and we do fun things together like road trips and watching movies and playing in a band together. So sometimes I act like a rock star.
I love that. And I can so see that from you.
Right. And then sometimes I just need to hide away from the world. And so my favorite thing to do would then be to find a cozy spot, a book, an iced coffee. And I, at that point, I'm probably trapped underneath a cat and I don't mind.
I love that. Okay. I want to just hone in on so many incredible things you said, but the one that sticks out to me is shame-free. I know for me in particular, I felt, frustrated or down on myself for not being able to fit into these certain programs or regimens that are intended to make you productive. And one that comes to mind for me is waking up at 5 a.m. That's not me. That's never going to be me. And that shame can really creep in, and it does the opposite, right? Is it forces us to just not try.
Absolutely. I'm so glad that you pulled that phrase out, because that's like my biggest soapbox. It's the thing that I want to get across, that just because you've tried something that doesn't work doesn't mean it's you that's the problem. Don't get me wrong. I appreciate taking responsibility for ourselves. I appreciate taking ownership of what we do and the choices that we make. But too often in the world, we have this singular, very specific approach to productivity that comes at us in terms of societal expectations and in terms of, experts who want to give you this solution, this answer, this magic bullet, this try this, even well-intentioned people who love to say, I tried this, you should too. Wait. What? And by the way, same girl about that morning person thing. It's not me. It's never going to be me. And yeah, I take great issue with the fact that we live in a society where there's sort of this elevated moral value applied to morning people.
It's very upsetting.
Right? It is. My circadian rhythm has nothing to do with the quality that I put out into this world.
Yes. Yes. And another thing, I want to jump into this question. Do you find Instagram harmful within the productivity realm? Because I know that's where a lot of our young people are getting their information.
I think what's harmful is the fact that Instagram and really any platform, this could be TikTok, I think, you know, anywhere where you're going to find your tips and your tutorials, where people, again, it can often be well-intentioned, but sometimes it's also from a marketing standpoint to sell things, keeping in mind who's your source, where are they coming from, what are they about. I think it can be harmful when people are sharing information and there's no vetting involved. You're not like, well, who said this? Do we have studies to back it up? Why do you think that this will work for me? It's one of those things where I see things like 10x your productivity. And I'm like, well, first you need to know my productivity in order to know that you can help me 10x it. And then what does 10x mean? And do I want to do that? Like, I think the problem with the quick sound bites on social media is there aren't enough questions to make sure that it's the advice you need to walk away with.
And I love that question about, would you want to 10x your productivity? Because like everything, when we add more things to our plate, right, it does come with a cost. We think about university, you know, it's a busy time. It's a stressful time between studies, social groups, you know, perhaps a job or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. It becomes the question of how do you become more productive within your current life, not how do I add to my life at some point?
Yeah, the idea that you need to work within the season of your life is a takeaway for all of us, no matter what our season is. But I think especially so when you are living a university life where you have a very obvious goal, right? You are trying to maximize your time there. You are trying to learn and grow and presumably walk away with a degree, right?
Yes, we hope so.
Right? And if you don't or something changes, rolling with that and rolling with the changes, that's important too. However, the idea is that you've walked in with a specific overarching goal. That's a season in your life. And that season will change and your opportunities will change. Your time frame will change. I talk to my kiddos who are teens and, you know, gearing up for college life potentially. And I say to them all the time, you have like a certain job to do, if you will, in high school, and you have a certain set of limitations that will change actually when you go to college. And that can be both brilliant and also terrifying. Like, and I've seen so many times with people who tend to be obligers and who need that outer accountability be strong in high school where there's a lot of structure. And then when everything opens up and you're like, freedom, it can be a challenge.
It can be. Now, I know that you've prepared so much to share with us, but one of the questions I want to dive into first is, how do you even define productivity in your words in the way that you see it?
In the simplest way possible, productivity is doing the right thing at the right time, the right way for you. And then it's allowing you to not necessarily do more. That's a really old-fashioned kind of concept of productivity that came from the Industrial Revolution, where you're saying, okay, I have this amount of time. How much can I cram into it? Now we're in an information age where we have everything at our fingertips. And now it's about being selective and intentional so that we live our best lives, that we are our best selves. So it's self-defined in a way, productivity. And that's incredibly important because once you define that yourself, what does it mean to be productive? What does it mean to be successful? Maybe it's more like that, the end goal. Like how am I going to feel when I do, you know, the things on my task list? Am I going to feel frustrated or am I going to feel like I have achieved something and I feel good about myself? It's self-defining, but really the right thing, the right way, at the right time for you.
The personalization aspect is so huge for you. Why did you come to that? Was there a specific moment or story that made you feel that way?
So we talked about shame, right, in the very beginning, and it always comes back to that because the personal side of this, the reason why I'm here today and doing productivity coaching in the way that I do comes from my own story of being a caregiver for my mom. She had Alzheimer's, and I cared for her through her life. through the life cycle of the disease specifically. It was roughly 5 years before she passed away. And during that time, I had two babies. And it was, I mean, I don't even know how to describe it except to say it was a lot. It was so much. And I was placed in a situation of survival mode. And it's not that I hadn't experienced survival mode before that, but this was a big one. And it was a life lesson waiting to happen because I was forced to not be able to do as much, to not be able to do the things I not only wanted to do, but sometimes needed to do. I was in a situation where I simply couldn't. So the perfectionist in me, the people pleaser in me, all of the things that drove me to overextend myself, the switch was flipped. It was like, yeah, you don't have a choice now. And within that experience of not having a choice, when I came out of it, I thought, well, what if I changed how I approach this? What if I still kept it minimal, still kept it simple, still decluttered and had fewer things, you know, around me and on my task list? What if I lived this same kind of like lower energy expenditure kind of life, even when things are good? What could that mean? What could that space mean for me? And that drove me to keep asking those questions of how much do we really need? How much do we really need to do? And start asking more questions about why do we have these things on our list? Where are the expectations coming from? Does it make sense for us? I had to learn about myself. I had to learn about my needs and my own desires. And I'm really excited about the idea of asking these questions at an earlier age. It came to me later, but these are questions you absolutely need to be asking yourself in the midst of college, because you're at a precipice. And the more that you can lock into who you are, how you work best, and what you really want, the better off you're going to be.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is the most overlooked question?
I think number one is, what do I really want? And I think maybe on a bigger scale, it comes down to that core values kind of idea. You know, the place that lights you up. Like, I stumbled into that in college after, you know, changing my major multiple times. And I'm not saying that might not still happen even when you ask questions, because sometimes you ask questions, you get the clarity, and you're like, and we're changing. But for me, I came into it not having asked those questions and stumbling into it because I kept finding things that didn't work. And thinking back on it, you know, I want to have that conversation more. I have it with my kids. I have it with anybody who listen, where it's like, okay, what really lights you up? Where do you feel most proud? What is your zone of genius, right? And figuring that out, that's a phrase that comes from a book called The Big Leap. Highly recommend it. It's the idea of the place where your gifts, your talents, you know, your passion intersects in such a beautiful way that you do things that other people see as a superpower. And you're like, I don't know. I just do it. It's great, you know, and it's just who I am. And you downplay it actually, but that is the place that you want to grow. I think we forget sometimes that it's not always about what am I struggling with? How do I make that better? I'm not saying don't improve yourself, but it's about taking the success part, the place that is natural and wonderful, and growing that. So yeah, I think the what do I want and what matters to me is kind of a combo initial question. Those are the big ones we don't nearly ask enough, especially because it can change.
You brought up the decluttering word. I think that can be such a big, profound challenge in university, is you're not working with a ton of space.
Yes.
You're working within limited space. So how do you keep that place somewhere that you can be productive?
So first, decluttering, thank you for telling me that that's scary to you. I would love to unpack why, but let's first start with the idea of clutter, and let's make some distinctions so that we know what we're talking about. So first of all, there's clutter, and then there's the idea of organizing your space, and they're actually two different things, but one makes the other easier. So when you're thinking to yourself, I need to get organized. Oh, look at this space, or look at my brain, or whatever space in your life, mental or physical, feels like it's too much and there's a lot of overwhelm and you want to get organized, remember that you do not want to organize what you don't intend to keep, because that's wasted energy. So clutter and organizing are two different things, and decluttering is always the first step. Now let's identify clutter. So as I mentioned, it is a whole life issue. There's mental and physical. And our environment, what's around us, can both affect and reflect our mental state. So sometimes it's, oh, I have a cluttered space and I can't think. I can't possibly do my homework. I'm sure you felt that. And then other times it's my mind is going crazy. I have too many decisions to make. I feel overwhelmed. And then our space tends to reflect that. And so either way, the decluttering and organizing will help. So clutter, according to Peter Walsh, is not just the stuff on the floor, but anything that gets in between you and the life you want to be living.
That is a beautiful definition. That's quite convicting with my 900 pairs of shoes.
If those 900 pairs of shoes are shoes that make you happy, that you use and that you honor, and that don't get in the way of the life you want to be living, then you can technically say they're not clutter. I do this a lot with bibliophiles, my fellow bibliophiles. I'm like, don't talk to me about my books. Actually, I have decluttered quite a few of my books. I use, you know, digital a lot now. So depending upon the type of book. However, the point is, you get to define it. What is getting in between you and the life that you want to be living? And so if your space is not conducive to what you're trying to do, whatever that is, proper rest, studying, socializing, all of the things, right? Then it's time to adjust that. So I wanted to lay down that foundation to understand clutter before we talk about what to do in that space. And I also want to mention that when you have clutter, we talk about it blocking how you want to live. It's not only, oh, how do I want to live? And it's blocking, you know, that, but there's very specific things that it can cause problems for in like a learning environment. And I think it's important to address this. One is that it can cause stress and anxiety. So stressful periods, you know, the body's reaction is to release cortisol, and cortisol actually disrupts cognitive function. We don't want to do anything that disrupts our cognitive function when we're trying to get through our college classes, right?
No, it's going to be the opposite of what you want.
Exactly. It also clutter. So there's a lot of visual stimuli, right? So it increases our cognitive overload, okay? That's limiting our brain's capacity to process information, less working memory. We don't want that. And it also challenges our concentration. So our brains are processing, you know, all the stuff. Even if we think they're not, even if we feel clutter blind, if we're used to it, we walk in, we're stepping over something, it's just there, and we think we're not thinking about it, but we actually are, because our brains are constantly taking in our environment and the stimuli. Now, sometimes it may be obvious and you may be like, I'm overstimulated. There's just too much stuff. But even when you don't think it's there, it is, and it's dividing your attention. It reminds me a bit of this idea of multitasking, which we love to think is a good thing, but it's actually debunked from a productivity standpoint. And when you have clutter surrounding you, your brain is like using the energy of multitasking without actually getting any results from it.
And this is making me think of mental clutter as well, because to your point about, oh my goodness, I have so many decisions to make. As somebody who does make a lot of decisions on a daily basis, it can be tough. It can be very mentally taxing. I call it my social batteries, in fact, right? After you make so many decisions in a day, you have a very depleted energetic force.
Oh, yeah. So our prefrontal cortex is the one making the decisions. And my understanding is that metabolically, it actually uses more energy than the rest of our brains. And I swear, when I'm thinking a lot, and I always think a lot, I'm a multi-passionate too, and I'm always, you know, thinking of new ideas, and I get exhausted. So yeah, I mean, the idea that we have clutter in our brains is an important one, because that's not where we want to hold information, and that's not where we want to keep using energy, because we need that energy to your point, make decisions. We need that energy to remember things for a test, to process ideas and come up with theories. David Allen, he has a system called Getting Things Done that's pretty popular. And I use some of his components that I think are really important. And the first is called a mind sweep, which is just like it sounds, like sweeping your brain, getting the clutter out and capturing it to put it in a safe space, because he says that your minds are not for holding ideas, but for, you know, creating them. And I think that's so important. It's sort of like when you take your device and you clear out, you know, all of the excess, the digital clutter. And
yes,
then
that's a good way to declutter, isn't
and,
it?
And that is actually one that I highly recommend, especially by the end of the year, you know, go through your photos and go through your files and your downloads folder. Anyone, you know, ask me how I know. All of those things will, you know, your device will be faster as a result because it's not bogged down. Same thing for your brain. And to this point, if you think about how we've described this, you can understand that decluttering isn't necessarily just getting rid of things. It's about where things belong and what makes sense in your space, whether it's your mental space or your physical space.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's about knowing yourself at a deeper level and honoring yourself. Now, Lisa, I have a hard question for you.
Go for it.
I don't think you're going to have any issues answering it. If you could give 3 pieces of advice to university age students, they can be about anything. What would those 3 pieces of advice be?
Oh my goodness. This is going to actually be a challenge, mostly because I have so many ideas. Like I said, multi-passionate.
Well, you can do more than 3.
Right. Okay. But I think for the sake of our topic and the sake of the fact that we are, you know, talking about living in a small space, we're talking about clutter, let me give some clutter, decluttering advice. All right. I might have to go with 4, and then we can always talk about organizing.
Let's okay. do 4.
So first is you want to figure out, this is knowing yourself, right? The fewest essential options that you need. And so another great book by Greg McKeown, Essentialism. The defining principle there is less but better. So think about things like that you have, like a capsule wardrobe is a great idea. You know, we think we need so many things. This is not dissing your shoes, I swear, Brooke. Again, you do what you love. But if you are looking to maximize your space, you're looking to declutter, think about something like a capsule wardrobe that involves mixing and matching and really focusing on like accessories and layers and things like that. So it's practical, it's fashionable, and it takes up less space. And the 80-20 principle is really big for this. And that's a principle that says you can get 80% of the way to your goal, to whatever output you want, to whatever result, with only 20% of an effort. And I love that. That's like a leveraging technique. So 80% of what you wear is probably about 20% of your closet. Focus on the 20%, store the rest. Again, you're not necessarily getting rid of it. Number 2 would be have some kind of dedicated bag or box where you decide you no longer want something. You can quickly put it there and remove it from the current space. You could even do this as a group if you're like in dorm life, or if you are sharing an apartment, you can have like this public area that could be a donation bin that also doubles as an exchange bin if you want to share clothing or share options. So you're repurposing, you're upcycling, and then eventually you can donate to local charities. The 3rd decluttering tip would be to watch what's coming in. And this is something I think we forget a lot, right? It is fun to purchase. Retail therapy is totally a thing. And I'm not saying don't do it.
It's
because again, you have
thing.
To know yourself, but put rules and boundaries around it. Limit your impulse buys by keeping a wish list, or put things in your Amazon cart, but don't click. Except I've done this with a lot of clients where it's like, okay, you get to decide what you're going to click on, you know, anytime, but you only buy once a week. And by then, you've given yourself the space to be like, can I really afford that? Do I really want it? Do I have the space for it? You want to swap things in and out. Oh, I really need to get that. I want to get that. What can I release to make space for it? You know, let yourself make those decisions so that you're not undoing all the work you've done. And the fourth thing, and this is sort of decluttering, organizing, I think it's a little bit of both, is opting for things that are reusable and multifunctional. And so, you know, never like a sink. Alton Brown, I don't know if you ever saw him on the Food Network. I just loved, he always brought like the scientific approach to things. And he talked about like single use items in the kitchen and how they take up too much space. It really is kind of a clutter element in the kitchen. And I always thought about that where it's like, okay, have something that's multifunctional. And then also when I said have something that is reusable, one of the things that I've done because I love to take notes is I use a rocket book now for not necessarily all the stuff that I want to keep. Like I have journaling that I do in an actual paper journal, but for processing, for writing things out, for sketching out ideas, you know, we always encourage the kids to have scratch paper, if you will. Well, I don't want so many trees to be felled just because I need to process a lot. So I use a rocket book, write it out, and then I can save it digitally if there's some information I need. But otherwise, I put the information where I need it. Once I've processed, erase it and move on. That takes up less space.
Mm-hmm. And less mental space as well.
Exactly. It's very simple. It's very straightforward. It lets you, that's a great way. Like I love using that for the mind sweep where I take everything out of my brain, put it there safely, then figure out what I need to do with it and erase it and move on. And then it doesn't like haunt you too, because you're not seeing stuff written everywhere. And then that becomes its own form of clutter, which is meta and annoying.
Yes. And you let it go energetically. And one of the things I love about all of your tips again is just how personal and how warm they are. You have a very beautiful way of explaining in that very shame-free and very guilt-free way. And I'm so here for it. And I'm also here for another question I have for you. Do you have a quote or a song or a mantra maybe that you live your life by?
Oh my goodness. Again, because I struggle to choose. I have so many that I think of. But really, when it comes down to it, Sophia Bush's quote that you are allowed to be a masterpiece and a work in progress simultaneously is the one that I absolutely live by. It's the one that I want you to take with you today, because we do want to better ourselves. We do want to declutter our spaces and get more organized. We do want to succeed. But, you know, embrace how amazing you are right at this moment. Celebrate who you are right at this moment, as well as each step you take, each thing that you try. Yeah, work in progress and masterpiece simultaneously.
That's beautiful. And it's so important because, as we've said throughout this entire conversation, we want to leave shame and guilt at the door of this. Now, Lisa, if somebody loves your approach, your warmth, your kindness, where do they go to learn more about you?
Thank you for asking. Positivelyproductive.com is the hub where it'll point to everything. You are listening to a podcast right now, and if that is something that you love to do, I'd be honored if you'd pop on over to Positively Living, where we talk about all of these things and more. I have a playlist at this point with at least 17 episodes on decluttering alone. So there's well over 240 episodes to choose from, and all of it is based on this shame-free, compassionate, fun approach to living better. And if you want to have some flat-out fun where you can trust the process and the tutorials, on Instagram, positively_Lisa is where I'm at, and you might want to just pop over there for the ridiculous reels that I do alone.
Oh my goodness. Well, if you love her presence, you've got to check out her podcast. I personally love her podcast. Lisa, is there anything you want to share today that we have not touched yet as we wrap up?
I think it's really a reminder to know yourself. And if that's something you feel like you don't know yet, then that is your first step. Because I know sometimes you hear these ideas and you're like, oh, what do I do first? That would be the first thing. Like, think about your space, your life, and what you want it to look and feel like. Start with that. And then you have some touch points. You have some milestones or mile markers, if you will, for the journey that you're on to make these changes and to maximize what you're doing.
Well, Lisa, you've taught me and you've convicted me. Now, we all know that clothes, makeup, and shoes is my personal addiction. So you'll have to have me go through some of that. You know, I still have some of the clothing from when I'm 12. So maybe that is a sign to do a little bit of decluttering. But I love this approach to it. As we said in the earlier, there are so many conventional productivity models that don't necessarily fit who I am. So I think what is really a true gift is just your very warm and your personal style. And I think so many people are going to benefit from us having you here. So I want to thank you again for sharing your time and your energy with us.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It was truly my pleasure, Brooke.
Thank you for joining me on Campus Chronicles. I hope you found our discussion informative, inspiring, entertaining, and fun. We are always working hard to make sure that our episodes are the very best they can be, which means we need your help. If you liked what you heard, remember to hit the follow button on your favorite podcast platform and drop us a review. It helps us to connect with more students who are hungry for success. And remember, the journey never stops. Keep listening, keep learning, keep growing. See you next week for another amazing episode of Campus Chronicles.